If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When I was a little kid, my dad was a cop. You see, my dad was a cop in the 80s in Sydney, which is generally regarded as the Wild West of law enforcement. A terrifying time to be a cop or a criminal or just to be in Sydney full stop. And I, one day, stumbled upon his case files and they absolutely ruined me. So years later, I approached Dad and we went through his old case files together and it became a book, Loose Units. It's in stores right now, actually. And now we're doing a podcast about it. Loose Units, the podcast, is a weekly true crime podcast where I sit across from my dad, an ex-cop from the 80s, and we dive deep into the seedy underbelly of Sydney's policing. So we're doing this podcast down here in Collingwood every week at Castaway Studios together, and we hope you enjoy it.
We're in different countries.
Yes, we are. Yes.
You're in Australia.
Yes.
And I'm in Thailand.
That's very true. And obviously we've technically finished, we finished 10 episodes of Loose Units, the podcast, and you've run off to another country.
I didn't run, Paul. I flew.
There's an image. Well, technically, I guess you'd have to run and then kind of build some speed up and then jump and then fly, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Sounds implausible to me.
Great. Well, you know all about that. Now, listen.
There's a four-hour time difference, so it's early in the morning here, and I'm sitting bolt upright with matchsticks in my eyes.
Huh.
Not in them. I mean, holding them open.
Yeah, no, propping them open. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Little trapdoors. Well, look, I know the tensile strength of the wood in the matchsticks is going to give out soonish, so we better get a hurry on. Listen, all the Loose Units listening to the show, you've been very very understanding about the fact that Dad has gone overseas for a couple of weeks, thereby depriving you of a few weeks of Loose Units, the podcast, but you also made it quite clear that you weren't going to stand for that. So the reason for this call, Dad, is to give the listeners some extra stuff to tide them over, maybe another case. So do you have anything that you wanted to give us this week?
Well, I've been sort of going through my memory. Oh, God.
What?
My depleted memory bank. God. And I came up with a car chase.
Well,
but it's quite an unusual car chase.
Yeah, okay, correct. Because, I mean, here's the thing. It's a sad state of affairs when you think car chase isn't interesting enough for us.
But this is a bizarre car chase in that, well, the story will reveal itself. It's sort of a double poignant car chase, the ending. Yeah,
sure.
Anyway.
Sure.
So would you like me to start?
Oh, my God, yes, please.
Okay, so for those people that have read the book, that's the book Loose Units, hopefully the first of at least another two or three series, may recall that there was a wonderful guy that I worked with that I can't mention his name, even though the funny thing is that for those listening to this podcast now, I could mention his name.
Right.
If this was a sort of an isolated story, but because he was also featured in your book, I can't really talk about because he was mentioned in relation to other stories that were somewhat perhaps sensitive. But in this particular case, anyway, he was an amazing guy and he was a senior constable.
Mm.
And it's weird, you know. I mean, I've just turned 59. In fact, just a few days ago, and thanks to all those lovely people that wrote in saying the nicest things. It was really, really sweet and really lovely. But how amazing is it that we're talking probably 38 years, and this story that I'm about to tell you, believe it or not, I actually walked around to it, is so crystal clear in my mind, and I'm surprised that you haven't heard the story, which is, again, exciting. Mm. So it's an afternoon shift. So as the listeners know, that's 3 p.m. till 11 p.m. Mm-hmm. And it was a weekday based at North Sydney, which was always a fairly busy station. And around about now, I know that it was getting dark. So it would have been, depending on the time of year.
Yeah.
I'm going to really stretch my memory and say that it was probably winter. Okay. Yep. So it would have been getting dark. So let's say around about 5 p.m. And I'm the driver, and I've got quite a few, I've got some good experience under my belt with driving.
Sure.
And, back in those days, even then, you were encouraged or discouraged in relation to anything to do with motorbikes. So you just, it's silly. It's a fantasy to consider or believe that you've got any chance chasing a motorbike.
What do you mean? Obviously. Like, you obviously can't catch up to them. I mean, you used to refer to motorcyclists as temporary citizens due to the high death rate, but I guess the trade-off is that you can maneuver incredibly, right?
Yeah. You know, the term temporary Australians was used, and I haven't heard it used that often these days, but it was definitely a term that everyone was familiar with, and it simply meant that if you rode a motorbike, but it was a different culture back then. I mean, we didn't have that Vespa culture, and I believe that I'm surprised that pretty well everyone in Australia doesn't ride bikes because of our beautiful climate. Mm. And I think, it's a great way to get around, particularly with urban traffic. But in this particular case, we spotted this super, super big bike. It was probably around about maybe 1,000cc, which is sort of at the top end of big bikes. And there was this guy, the rider, but he had this young girl on the back, and she didn't have a helmet. So I was a bike rider at the time, and I just sort of said to my mate, look, maybe we should at least, get her to perhaps put a helmet on, or worse is that if you don't have a helmet, then maybe consider not even riding on the back of the bike, because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
And what happened was, this guy looked behind, he saw us, and she sort of grabbed onto his, put her arms around his waist, and he popped a wheelie, so he's gone up on one wheel, and this is a massive bike, and he took off sort of doing a wheel stand.
Mm.
Then he sort of lowered the bike, and they were off, and we just thought, bugger it, let's at least try and chase them. And so we start chasing. And we're chasing them through Crow's Nest, which is a suburb on the northern side of the harbour, Sydney Harbour.
Yeah.
And, things are going pretty well. And there was a fair bit of traffic around, and it enabled us to kind of, keep them within sight, because we knew the area really well. And again, going back to the principles, the basic principles of car chases, vis-a-vis police versus whoever.
Yeah.
Is it's always our objective, as I've said, sort of, ad nauseum, to try and push the offending vehicle beyond their limitations. But in this particular case, we were dealing with, a guy that, was a real expert on the bike. And
Hey, just quickly, when you say young girl, I'm picturing like a 7-year-old. How old are we talking here?
She would have been, maybe 16 or 17.
Okay. Good.
But what one of the striking parts of this, story early on, is that what happened was, she was clearly banging with a fist, punching into his back. That indicated to us that A, she was shit scared, B, she wanted to get off the bike,
right.
And he had no intention. So he was kind of, we were in a situation where it looked as though, she was a very reluctant pillion passenger.
Yeah.
And he's sort of in and out, ducking around cars and weaving, and it's getting dark. And what happened was that we think that he actually had some really, really good knowledge of surrounding suburbs. Mm. And what he either on purpose or inadvertently did is that he actually took us well out of our area. And we went into the next suburb, which is called Narromburm. And it's kind of a sleepy suburb, or it was back then, where little happened apart from the odd rape, murder, break and enter, etc. And we're sort of racing through these back streets, heading north. And then I began to realise, as your listeners will know, the brakes were starting to fade, which is always a fun thing.
Yeah.
But back in the day, the exciting thing for us is that they didn't call chasers off. So we just had carte blanche to just keep going. And it was always a bit in the back of your mind with a motorbike, you're always thinking, you know, they've probably got a bigger chance of having an accident. And if they do have an accident, it's probably going to be a lot worse than, you know, if they were in a car, particularly with the girl on the back who was now a reluctant passenger. Mm. So that intensified our desire to sort of finish things in a sort of a safe way.
Okay.
And they took us into these back streets of Narromburm, and then you're not going to believe this. But I don't know whether it was a sort of a fluke, but he ends up taking us into this fairly quiet street. But it was weird in that they'd put these metal barriers toward the end of the street. These were metal barriers, maybe five of them in the middle of the road, to block the road off to create a cul-de-sac.
Oh, okay. So, well, hang on. Were these put there by the police who'd kind
No.
of...
No. Very sweet assumption. But no, the council were creating a cul-de-sac.
Right.
So what they'd done is they decided to make a normal street into a no-through road. They'd put these barriers in, and then ultimately they would have paved on the other side of the barriers to create a true cul-de-sac, then remove the barriers.
Right.
So this guy on the motorbike, he can drive through. He can pass between two of these metal poles.
Yeah.
And he gets through, and you just knew that he was so, so happy, because he realized in that sort of microsecond that he'd won.
Right.
We couldn't go through the barriers. Hmm. And I'm doing around about, I guess I was doing maybe 60 kilometers an hour, and I was a fair way from the barriers. And he's sort of got through, put his legs down. She's still on the back. He looks behind, and he gives us the fuck you. Now, at that point, I had a very, very, very short period of time to make a decision. Mm. I either stop and sort of come to a screeching halt, and they piss off.
Yep.
Or I can push the accelerator flat to the floor, and in doing so, being an automatic car, it would have knocked back a gear, back into second,
yeah,
and give you that amazing driving force. And I shouted to my mate, this is all happening really, really quickly, and there's a lot of adrenaline, there's a lot of, you know, tension and excitement, and I basically just shouted, words to the effect, what do I do? And he said, gun it. Which were words to my, music to my ears. Now, when he said gun it, I remember putting my foot flat to the floor, knocked it back into second, and we're accelerating rapidly. Now, we got to, and so you can imagine this, the guy on the motorbike, he's expecting us to stop.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead, we accelerate. He would have heard it, he would have seen it, and then he would have then realized, and I guess the scary thing is at this point is that if he hadn't have moved, that would have been catastrophic.
Right.
Because we would have, in theory, it could have been, we would have impacted our car with his bike, which was a bit of a drama. So we got up to around about maybe 70 or 80 kilometres an hour, and we really had no idea what was going to happen. He probably crapped himself, and he's turned back to the front and he's just taken off. And within seconds, he's pretty well out of sight.
Mm.
And we're heading towards these metal barriers. Now, we didn't know what was going to happen, but it was exciting. and might I say, somewhat foolhardy.
Yeah.
And the police car, which was a Falcon, we hit two of these barriers, but we didn't stop. So the barriers, two of them bent over. Now, I'm sort of saying this all very, very slowly as though it's all happening in slow motion.
Yeah.
Obviously, the whole thing happened in about a second.
Mm.
But when the front of our car impacted with these two poles, the poles bent to around about maybe 30 degrees from the ground.
Mm.
And what they did, like an aircraft carrier, just got a sort of a curve at one end to give those, the fighter jets some lift.
Yeah.
It gave our car some lift and actually sent our police car off at an angle at about 30 degrees, and we were actually flying.
Great. Okay.
Exciting.
Well, you've been in the air wing, so that's kind of your wheelhouse.
I don't think I've been in the air wing at that point.
Maybe that's what made you go there.
Made me want to, and the fact that I'd been skydiving, so I got to, to feel a sense of flight again.
Sure.
And so our police car is in the air,
mm-hmm.
and like in back in the 70s, there was a show called Starsky and Hutch.
Yes, I know.
And the Dukes of Hazzard and all those TV shows, where probably 20% of every show, the cars were airborne. So things were looking good. Because what happens is when you're airborne, in theory, is that at a certain point in the future, you will actually make contact with the Earth again.
Mm-hmm.
So we're flying through the air. God knows what my colleague, the look on his face, because obviously I wasn't looking at him. I was looking at where we were going to land. And thank God that the bike had left. Otherwise, we would have landed on top of them. And now we could see them right at the end of the corner. He'd actually stopped again because he thought he'd stop and get a big laugh. He's sort of ridden with the girl on the back, probably another, let me think, maybe 100, 150 metres, and then stopped again.
But at this point, he's turned around and looked at the Duke boys who've been in the air for three, four minutes at this point.
Yep, flying through the air.
Yep.
And he realises that we're fairly committed to this whole situation, and we're probably never going to give up chasing him.
Sure.
So then he and the great thing is that when we landed, and it was a rough landing, the car bounces, like in the Blues Brothers, we get those police cars.
Not quite
in the Blues Brothers scene where they actually, the guys go off that cliff and they're free-falling for about 5 minutes. It wasn't like that, obviously.
Well, thank God.
But the thing is, when our car landed, in theory, things were great and we were going to keep chasing these two, but what we didn't realise is that as the car drove over the metal barriers, they'd actually torn out the sump, which is where all the oil's kept in the car. So the police car basically shits its pants, drops oil, which I guess from an ecological perspective is pretty uncool.
Yeah, sure.
We really didn't think about it back in the 80s. And the car kept going for a little while, and we were really motoring. We were doing, I'd guess we were doing maybe 80 or 90 kilometres an hour, and all of a sudden the entire car just seized up because we had no more oil in the engine, and the entire motor just stopped. And in doing so, it then caused us, I basically lost control of the car, and we did a four-wheel drift. So we're actually drifting into a gutter. We hit this gutter at high speed with such ferocity that the inside or the near side wheels, they're the wheels on the passenger side.
Yeah.
They both folded in underneath the car. So we're sitting at this weird angle.
Yeah.
We're considerably higher than my partner because I'm at the side of the car, which has still got wheels.
Yes.
It was comical. And we realised we weren't injured. The guy on the bike and the girl, they've gone.
Yep.
And by now, it's a dark street. And so picture this. It's a dark street, a quiet street. People start coming out, and what they see is an oil slick, two bent-over poles, two police officers stunned, sitting inside a car with the siren and the light still going. and at a really weird angle.
Sure.
So that's what they'd be confronted with, which in itself would have to look fairly weird. And we had the embarrassment of then we had to turn the siren off. We get out of the car, and the car was pretty rat shit. And we had to call it in. Now, because it was in another area, we had the, and because it was a police accident, there's a lot of protocol when you basically ride off a police car. It's it's pretty serious. So we had to get the officer in charge of Chatswood Police Station that we didn't know. And, you know, he's sitting down to a nice meal. It's a quiet night. He gets the call. He's got to get into his own special police car and drive himself to a job, to a situation that basically he's not, you know, he's really, really pissed off.
Did he use the bollards for some lift, or did he go around a different way?
He went the right way.
Okay.
So he knew the area, of course.
Sure.
And he walks up and he just sort of, he gets out of the car. He didn't say a word. He looks at us. He looks at the car. And he's clearly pissed off.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
And he said to my colleague, he said, well, you'll have to get it towed, which was quite a bizarre thing to say, because it was obvious. Now, we had to get a police tow.
Right.
So, you know, it's all organized. And back in those days, we had these little white boxes on top of the police cars, and it had the word police.
Yeah.
And it used to flash, and it didn't do anything. It just sort of went on and off like a sad little low-volt, poxy, dim light. It was archaic. Mm. It's if you go back in the history of police cars, you'll see these weird little signs on the top of cars that say police, and they'd be flashing. But we turned off the siren and the main lights, but we'd left this thing on inadvertently. Anyway, this tow truck rocks up, and the tow truck driver gets out, and he was probably, he looked like a sort of a part-time Hell's Angel,
right,
covered in singlet, sweaty, hates police, as most tow truck drivers do. And he gets the vehicle all hooked up. And we said to the officer in charge at Chatswood, we said, can we get a lift? And he went, nah. He said, get a lift in with the tow truck. Can you believe it? So the two of us, we had to squeeze in the front cabin of this tow truck with our police car unceremoniously attached to the back of the truck.
Right.
And we're sort of squashed up. Literally, the three of us are squashed in the front of this cabin of this rotten, stinking tow truck with this guy that wouldn't talk to us, who had arms on him that were thicker than me, yeah, my whole body.
Yeah.
And he had to drive us back to the police station. And then I looked in the rear vision mirror as we're going down the road, and I could see I'd left the little sign on, the flashing sign. It must have looked to people passing by, this car with a bloody little police sign on the roof flash. No, this just can't get any worse. And to be dropped off at the station by this guy that just hated the police, and it was all just, it was surreal. So that's kind of that part of the story. But then here's the look. I don't know how to describe how I feel about the next thing I'm going to say, but
sure.
It's pretty heavy. Yeah. Pretty heavy. It turns out that this particular guy, because we had all the details.
For the motorcycle driver?
Yeah, we had all these details, and he was a bit of a, you know, he wasn't a crim, and but we knew where he lived, and we kind of were following up on, you could do what was called like a breach report, where you'd go back to the station and fill out all the details, and you could proceed by summons, and yeah, we were sort of going down that path,
yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, there's a road up north of Sydney called the Old Pacific Highway, and it's a really beautiful road. It's not like the expressway, which is sort of fairly boring and flat. It's really challenging for motorbike riders, yeah. And hence a lot of bike riders use it. And we received a report that this guy and the girl had overshot a corner. And like in a really, really bad movie, they must have been traveling incredibly fast, because they went off a cliff.
Oh, God.
And they actually went through. So the two of them and the bike went through a massive billboard.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and were killed. So that was we found that out a few weeks later.
Oh, God.
Yep. So there you go.
I guess, ironically, if you caught them that night, that wouldn't have happened.
Yep. Maybe, perhaps. Not,
or maybe it would have happened eventually anyway. I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah. But that's pretty full on.
That's horrifying. I mean, it does get me thinking about traffic. I mean, part of the reason I wanted to chat with you, Dad, is because I had there was a story that you told me a little while ago that is relevant. Let me just set this up for the listeners. So, my fiance Tegan Higginbotham, who's a comedian and broadcaster and presenter, and she's amazing. She has launched a podcast about why we're all so obsessed with Paris. It's called Rue Lamarck, and there'll be a link to it below this episode. And it's on iTunes right now. Episode 1 is finally launched. It's just crammed with amazing guests, and I'm the I'm producing the show. And obviously, you know, Tegan and I are very, very into Paris. And I was chatting with you, Dad, about Paris, because you and my sister Anne went to Paris a couple of years back, and you told me a story about some fairly hairy driving stuff that is actually set in Paris. So I thought maybe you could tell that story on this show as a way of kind of, you know, discussing a Parisian adventure of yours.
Okay, well, look, I guess all the listeners that have driven overseas will appreciate that, you know, driving in different countries presents different experiences. You know, we have a certain sort of way of driving in Sydney and in Melbourne in the country. Before I talk about that, perhaps I can just mention that every time, we're in Thailand, I always hire a car here.
Sure.
And, you know, driving in Asia is pretty intense. And the key to driving in Asia is you just concentrate on what you're doing, and you don't look or think about the thousands and thousands of bikes around you,
right.
Motorbikes. And you just know, you get to know after a while that they actually will avoid you. So that's sort of one style of driving. Your sister Anne won a prize. It was an international writing competition, and the prize involved return flights to Paris.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she asked me whether I'd like to sort of go with her, and I obviously responded in the affirmative. And when we arrived in Paris, part of the deal was that we'd pick up a brand new, it was a Renault, I think.
Okay.
From the airport. Now, I don't like driving on what I term the wrong side of the road. So imagine you rock up to Paris, and it's a fairly long flight. It's at least 20 hours. Mm. We'd stopped in Abu Dhabi for a little while. And so we arrive at Charles de Gaulle in the morning, and it's peak hour. It's a Monday morning,
yeah,
7 a.m., and you're off your face. And we pick up this – I actually can't remember how we made our way to this weird car place. And we pick, and there's this car, a brand new Renault, and Anne says, well, we've got to drive it into the city. So we get into this car, and I'm sitting on the other side of the – I'm sitting on the left side, which is bizarre. If it had been a manual, I just couldn't have done it.
Sure.
No way. But it's an auto, thank God. So at least I can concentrate on the steering.
Mm.
And so – you're delirious, jet lag, sun's coming up, and you're driving on the other side of the road, and it's a big call, and it's stressful. And we programmed the onboard computer, and it's kind of telling you where to go, and it was just, look, it was pretty heavy going.
Is it telling you where to go in English or French?
Oh, I can't remember. Honestly, I was off my face. And it's not what you want to do when you rock up to a city and drive. I think, actually, that's the first time I've ever driven on that side of the road in my life. And, you know, if you've been driving, if you've got a lot of kilometres under your belt, if you've been driving for, say, you know, at least 40 years, it's pretty well indelibly etched into your psyche and your DNA. This is how I drive. And then to sort of flip it is like when you come to a roundabout in Europe, you know, what do we do in Australia at a roundabout? We go left. Oh, no. No, you've got to go right. And that completely fucks with your mind.
Yep. Yep.
So anyway, I'm concentrating super hard on getting us to this hotel. Now, the hotel was on the Seine in like meters from the Eiffel Tower, so it's right in the middle of Paris. It's peak hour, and I'm driving, and Anne just sort of had this weird tone, and she said, "Oh, Dad, look what's ahead." I didn't know what to expect, and I sort of look up. It's not as though, in fairness to the listeners, that I'd been looking down all the time, but you know, I was concentrating not on what was a long, long way ahead of me, and I realised that we're heading towards the Arc de Triomphe. Now, that particular location in the world has a reputation as being I don't know how to describe what I saw, but it looked like
How many lanes is it around the Arc de Triomphe? Because it's like the world's biggest roundabout. I think it's.
It looked as though the cars were 20 deep.
It's somewhere between like 7 and 9 lanes of it's mayhem. I read that somewhere there's multiple car crashes there every single day, just non-stop crashes basically. And you're heading in there jet lagged, driving on the wrong side of the road.
Wrong side of the road, and I just thought I could feel my sphincter pucker up. And I thought, I need to close every bodily orifice. I'm just not going to get through this.
Yeah.
And poor Anne, you know, she's sort of sweet. She's not saying anything, but obviously, you know, shitting herself.
Yeah.
And then from memory, I'm not quite sure whether this is right, but I feel from memory that it was cobbled. I'm not sure.
It is. No, you're. I've been on top of it relatively recently and looked down, and it is cobbled. Yeah.
So that presents itself, you know, with another weird, because the car's sort of gyrating and vibrating from underneath you, and you sort of emerge into this shitstorm. It reminded me of it looked like looking down at ants, like millions of ants, all right. Just sort of. But thank God they're all going in one direction, and you get into this weird sort of a vortex. And it slows right down, thank God. And you kind of just have to try and get through it. But then you're confronted with this equally horrifying prospect of how the fuck do I get out of it?
Right.
Because you've got to know, and if you're not in the right spot, if you're too deep within this sort of vortex, then you can't get out of it the way you'd like to, i.e. sort of veer out to the right. You've then got to, I guess, go around it. But like a funnel, you know, when you take the plug out of a sink, everything's working toward the center.
Yeah.
And then you just go down and vanish. And that's that feeling you start to get that as you keep going around, you're being drawn into the actual middle. And in the middle, there's nothing you can do.
Well, there is the arc itself, but as everyone knows, that if you pass through the actual arc, you'll end up in another universe. So it's best not to give in to the pull of gravity.
So I was relying on Anne to sort of help me out, and eventually we managed to. I don't know how, but it was a very, very, it was an exciting experience afterwards to know that I'd actually done it.
Yeah.
And there'll probably be listeners that go, you know, whoopee-do, you know, but I don't think a lot of Australians that visit Paris, at least on holidays, look, why on earth would you hire a car in Paris when you've got such a great public transport system?
It's so great.
And the joy and beauty of Paris, of course, is walking and just taking it in, because it's like I've always thought that with travel, it's always great to go to places that are different, where you actually can say, I am in a certain city.
Yes.
Which, you know, I've had in Amsterdam. I've certainly had it in Iceland, where you just know in Reykjavik, wow, this is, you know, it's sort of places that you know, perhaps in Morocco as well, and of course London, as opposed to a generic city where, you know, you could be anywhere. But, yeah, look, it's the fact that we had the car for a few weeks and we got to drive around France, which was exciting, but that was pretty full on.
Did you ever did you ever see any French police officers? When you go to a foreign country and you see cops from a different, you know, culture and different uniforms behaving differently, do you ever, like, you know, compare and contrast with your own experiences?
Look, the I do remember, I've often kind of, if I get an opportunity, I try and talk to police in various countries, because there is that international, I guess in theory, a sense of camaraderie in that you're all pretty well doing the same thing. But one of the things I did notice in Paris that was fairly, it was pretty full on, and that was that a lot of the gendarmes carry machine guns.
Ah.
So that's a bit of a shock. And you know, they, when they walk the streets over there, when you see police carrying sort of at 45 degrees to their body, these guns that are, you know, mighty, mighty powerful, you begin to realise that perhaps things are not, you know, it's different to Sydney and Melbourne.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, the image of Paris is like the criminal element there wears strappy long sleeve shirts, little burglar masks, and have twirling moustaches, and they steal bags with the, you know, with coins in them. But in actuality, yeah, Paris is a hub, like a European hub, and they've had a lot of insane stuff happen. Like, can you imagine being a police officer in a city where things were that escalated? I mean, do you think that would dissuade people from enrolling in the police academy, or do you think it would actually up enrolments?
Look, I think if you have a desire at any point in your life to become a police officer, look, let's cut to the chase here. Policing is, it's exciting. When you walk out onto a public street in uniform, you know, it's like putting on a kind of a, perhaps a little bit like putting on a superhero's outfit. You've got a little bit more power perhaps. And some people abuse it.
Yes.
But, you know, I observe police in Sydney, and, you know, one thing I look, one glaringly sort of obvious thing for me that I do notice is that the size, you know, in terms of the physical characteristics of police these days, at least in Sydney,
yeah,
because of the equal employment opportunity legislation that there's a greater diversity in, you know, I mean, when I, you, you know, in your book, when we talk about when I went for
the physical,
the physical, and it was just, you know, they had a minimum height. That was it.
Yeah, they wouldn't. They wouldn't do that these days.
No. They don't do that these days. Mm. You know, and I've seen some, you know, fairly. I don't know how to put it.
Not atypical like action hero style, you know, physical features. I guess what I'm angling for, Dad, is that you've technically run your course as a police officer in New South Wales. Would you ever consider heading across to Paris and re-enrolling as like a senior sergeant or something? Do you think you could have another crack at it in another city, specifically Paris, because you know it's Paris?
Well, you know, if I look in Thailand, they have what are called tourist police.
Uh huh.
And that I've considered doing here.
Is that where you stop tourists taking photos with their iPads in art galleries? Or are you talking like you're a police officer who liaises with not the local population?
You liaise with all the tourists. Because yeah. Imagine in Thailand, for example, there are places here that where, you know, there are lots of tourists.
Yeah.
Obviously. And, you know, I think it's a really, really, really clever idea where the Thai police, the Royal Thai police, have decided that, you know, why not have some police representatives from all the different countries, mainly Western countries and European countries, where tourists, you know, if you're a French tourist, you can go to a tourist police officer because, you know, let's face it, English is, dare I say it, pretty well the universal language.
It's certainly up there, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, isn't it wonderful to think that if you have a problem here, you can go to a police officer, albeit a sort of a, not a token police officer, but, you know, they don't have the same powers. But, you know, in Paris, if they called for ex-police,
yeah,
that where English was their mother tongue, I'd give it a crack because what an amazing and exciting and exhilarating way to discover the true city,
yeah,
the essence of the city. Because policing, what you're doing is like, remember in the book where we spoke about a shift in general duties back in the 80s would consist of a minimum of 2 to 250 kilometers per shift cruising.
Mm.
Kilometers an hour.
Imagine doing that around Paris, Jason Bourne style, like through alleyways. Yeah,
but imagine working with some of the great police in Paris.
Oh.
Imagine the things they'd show you. Yeah. Imagine the places they'd take you.
Yeah.
Wow. It would be exciting. And again, in your book, there was that police officer that I worked with at North Sydney that used to spend all his annual leave working as a
LAPD. Full
officer in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I think if anything, if we've learned anything during this, I mean, we said, okay, first of all, we said this was going to be a bonus episode and it's turned into basically a full-length episode. So let that be a lesson to your listeners. When you ask for something, you will get it. And it seems like this break from the podcast isn't really a break so much as it is just a change in location. But also, I would like to consider this episode a legally binding promise that at some point, some of you may be in a far-flung country, probably in Paris, and you might see a familiar silver-haired sergeant helping people cross the street, and it might be Dad. Well, look, one little extra piece of housekeeping. We will be doing another episode like this next week, in all likelihood, so make sure you stay tuned. If you haven't already grabbed Loose Units, the book, it's in bookstores now, or you can order it online, or there's an ebook, or alternatively, you can wait until April the 1st when you can get the audiobook from literally anywhere and everywhere that you get audiobooks from. Make sure you head across to iTunes and have a listen to Rue Lamarck. That's R-U-E. L-A-M-A-R-C-K. It's named after the street that Tegan and I stayed on the first time we went to Paris. It's right behind the Sacré-Cœur. It's really an incredible, funny, charming, informative show, and it's on iTunes right now. It's crammed full of amazing guests. The website, rulemark.com, which we built, is, again, just your one-stop shop for everything Parisian, so make sure you hit that up. And we will see you next week for another bonus episode of Loose Units, the podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.